Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Finals!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
We're back for more Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Happy to be back with you on this afternoon drive loaded show. I'm extremely excited about today's show. We got a couple of great guests. We are going to talk a lot of football. We will be joined by Coach Josh Huntsman of the Carbon Dinos. That's coming up in just a bit. Next segment, actually, we'll catch up with Coach Huntsman. And a little bit later on in the show, we'll be joined by Ian O'Connor, ESPN senior writer, New York Times best-selling author. He's got his latest work out. It's called Belichick, The Making of the Greatest Football Coach of All Time. I have a copy of the book. Haven't been able to read it yet. Just got it in the mail from Ian a couple of days ago. It's a big book. 3 years of research going into it. Really excited about this interview and to get to know a little bit about what is in this story, the life of Bill Belichick. And it's perfect timing because tonight here on KOAL, we have NFL football. The New England Patriots, they get Julian Edelman back, and they'll take on the Indianapolis Colts. It's a big game. I mean, the Patriots right now, we're sitting at 2-2. The Colts are fresh off of an overtime loss to the Houston Texans last week. Kind of a controversial way to end the game from a coaching standpoint. Frank Reich decides to go for it on fourth down. Colts don't get it. 20-something seconds left in overtime. Deshaun Watson hooks up with Hopkins across the middle of the field. Field goal. Texans win. So, again, we're at that time. Second quarter of the season begins tonight. Patriots at 2-2, the Colts at 1-3. Tom Brady talking with the media about getting Julian Edelman back. It's been a while since Brady has had Edelman, but I'll tell you, this receiving core for New England is so bleak that you got to believe that Tom Brady is elated to have Julian Edelman back in the mix. Here's Tom Brady talking about getting Julian Edelman back for tonight's game.
Well, I think we've played so much football together. You know, I really have no doubt where he's going to be at, what he's capable of. He's been a great player for our team. And I think everyone's excited to have him back. And anytime you add great players, it's going to help what we're doing. You know, we all welcome him back, and he's excited, ready to go. And hopefully he can go out and play great. Hopefully we can all go play great. We're going to need it.
Now, there is another storyline tonight that really I thought we'd see more on. Remember in the offseason when Josh McDaniels took the head coaching job of Indianapolis? Wasn't official, but there were reports. They'd come to an agreement. Then he backed out and he decided to stay put in New England. It's the first time that these two teams have played since that particular storyline. And I know we will talk a little bit more about that later on in the show with Ian O'Connor. But here's Andrew Luck, asked about the thought of playing against Josh McDaniels.
Actually, no. And it was odd. it was odd, but no, honestly, it hasn't. It's more, Belichick and Flores and the defensive, side of things that occupy my mind.
Kickoff for tonight's game is set for 6:20 p.m. Live coverage will begin at 6. Ian Eagle, Tony Baselli will bring you the live play-by-play call. Let's take a look at what's happening right now with the national sports front. Major League Baseball, the National League Divisional Series, the Rockies and the Brewers. We get two baseball games tonight. The first one is in right now. Third inning, going into the fourth inning, still no score. The Rockies trying to use the momentum from that wild card victory over the Cubs just a couple of nights ago. See if they can pick up a win over the Brewers. Still home field advantage. Right now, no score. And look, the Rockies have proven that they, typically in the past, I guess what I'm trying to say, the Rockies needed to win games 9-8, 7-6. They beat the Cubs 2-1. Right now, through three innings, they're even with the Brewers at no score. So this Rocky team, this pitching, the staff, the bullpen, they have played very, very well. And right now, they're trying to steal home field from the Brewers. We will keep you updated on this score throughout the show. Tonight, 6:37 p.m., the Dodgers and the Braves. It's at Chavez Ravine. The Dodgers have home field, which is crazy because they were in a tiebreaker game just on Monday. But the Dodgers, you know, they do have home field advantage. Tonight, no Clayton Kershaw. Hyun Ryu will get the start for the Dodgers. A little bit shocking. I thought with the extended break, maybe you would see Kershaw. Instead, Ryu is going to be on the mound tonight for LA. If we have time, we'll talk more baseball a little bit later on in the show. Outside of that, really not a whole lot cooking in the national sports front from a storyline perspective. But again, it is a fun time of the year with a lot of great stuff happening, including the NBA back as far as preseason goes. We have NBA basketball tonight as well. Only two games, however. We get the Houston Rockets, who are an intriguing team out of the Western Conference. They take on the Indiana Pacers on NBA TV tonight at 6 p.m. preseason matchup. The Sacramento Kings on the road taking on the Los Angeles Lakers, LeBron James and company. That's the second game on NBA TV, set for 8:30 p.m. Boy, it's amazing. The Lakers haven't been to the playoffs in 5 years. You add someone like LeBron James, they're on TV every night of the week. And that's a quick look at what's happening in the national sports front. We will jump around the local sports scene here in just a moment. And again, coming up on the show today, we'll catch up with Coach Josh Huntsman of the Carbon Dinos and Ian O'Connor, ESPN senior writer and New York Times bestselling author. We'll talk about his latest book, Belichick. It's all coming up on this Thursday edition of Drive Time Sports right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Reporting from the KOAL newsroom, I'm Jordan Boscarini with a look at local sports. And this afternoon, the Carbon Lady Dinos will wrap up the 2018 regular soccer season as they travel on the road to meet the Juab Wasps. The Lady Dinos last participated in a contest last Thursday. That was senior night at home against the Delta Rabbits. Carbon fell in that contest by a final score of 3-1. Katie Marshall scored the team's lone goal. While tonight is the regular season finale, the Carbon Lady Dinos already know their playoff fate. Next Thursday, they will take on the Emory Lady Spartans at home. Emory already wrapped up the regular season, finishing third in Region 15, and Carbon, regardless of tonight's outcome, as third place wrapped up in Region 14. Stay tuned to Castle Country Radio tomorrow. We'll talk about the final results of tonight's contest and go over the complete 3A state girls soccer bracket. We stick with the high school sports scene, but we move over to Pinnacle High School. And the boys' baseball season came to a close earlier this week on Tuesday as Pinnacle suffered a 7-1 loss to Paiute in the quarterfinals at Nelson Field in Spanish Fork. Pinnacle maneuvered through the first round of the state tournament by topping Wendover 10-2. The contest took place back on September 29th. The 1A state championship tournament will continue now at Dixie State on October 5th. The final four teams remaining are Diamond Ranch Academy, Wayne, Paiute, and Valley. We move over to cross country, and yesterday the Carbon Dinos traveled on the road to the Union Invitational, where they competed against six other schools. On the boys' side of the track, the Carbon Dinos finished in first, scoring 34 points, topping Union, who finished second with 39. Who had a comfortable lead over third-place Providence Hall, who finished with 100 points. The Dinos dominated throughout the meet. James Briner was the top-finishing performer. He crossed the finish line in 18 minutes and 10 seconds. Ryan Page was the second-best scorer for Carbon. He finished fourth overall with a time of 18:13. Chad Page finished in fifth with a time of 18:27. Ammon Wilson was ninth overall with a time of 18:41. And Shane Skowgard finished 14th with a time of 19:03. Now on the girls' side of the track, the Carbon Lady Dinos finished in second. They scored 54 points compared to first place Union, who finished with 23. Providence Hall was in third place with 72 points. The Lady Dinos were led by Emma Haddock. She finished third overall with a time of 22 minutes and 21 seconds. Grace Broadbear was fourth. Megan Swayze, 14th. Gracie Tatton, 18th. And Madison Childs, 20th. With the Union invite now complete, the Carbon Dinos will next compete in the region finale next Wednesday on the road at Lakeside Park. And that'll set up the epic conclusion to the 2018 season at the state championship tournament on October 17th at Sugar House Park. We move over to Drive Time Sports, and today on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM, we will be joined by Carbon Dino football coach Josh Huntsman. The Dinos are currently 1-2 in Region 3A North play, and after suffering a 47-23 loss to Grantsville on the road, Carbon will return home tomorrow to take on the number one team in the 3A classification, the Morgan Trojans. Following Coach Huntsman's appearance on the show today, we will be joined by famed writer Ian O'Connor, who has recently released his latest book, Belichick. It's an inside look at one of the most historical football coaches in the sport's history, Bill Belichick. Ian O'Connor is a senior writer for ESPN and has published multiple New York Times bestsellers. That'll be today on KOAL's Drive Time Sports beginning at 4 p.m. You can find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
You watch the games. You follow the team. You wear the colors with pride. And you have questions, and only one man can answer them. Get the answers to the tough questions.
On the eve of week 8 of the high school football season, tomorrow night, KRPX 95.3 The Peak, the Carbon Dinos will play host to the Morgan Trojans. Carbon, who seems to get better each week, playing host to the number one team in the 3A classification. And again, live coverage will begin on KRPX beginning at 6:30 p.m. with Landon's Diesel Service pregame show. Kickoff will follow shortly after at 7. Joining us right now to talk about tomorrow night's game and also last week's loss to the Grantsville Cowboys, we have Coach Josh Huntsman on the phone right now. Coach, it's always fun to get you on. I appreciate you joining us again today.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Coach, we'll start by talking about Friday's game against Grantsville. I'm really inspired by this team's performance. I was really curious to see how the squad would come out following the win over Emory. You got to go on the road. You play a really good team in Grantsville that's very big up front. You guys found a way to score 23 points. You actually scored first in this game. It was compelling. You made Grantsville work for it on Friday.
You know, I felt like we did. I felt like, we had a better first half. You know, we played well in the first quarter and then kind of struggled a little bit in the second quarter. You know, didn't play too bad in the third quarter. And then, you know, fourth quarter, we held the ball most of the fourth.
Is that something that was kind of in the plan from the beginning? I mean, you want to control the clock, right, when you're going up against a team like Grantsville, because they want to run the football, but at the same time, they have big play capability.
Yeah, they definitely did. And, you know, there was no way that we were going to be able to stop Thomas. We were just trying to contain him a little bit. And, you know, he kind of ran wild a little bit on us in the second half.
Was that just kind of, I guess, maybe being, I don't know, size-wise, maybe is this something that the kids were just worn down, Coach, later on in the game?
I think we were a little bit tired, and we were a little bit beat up in the back end in the second half. And so, you know, we had a few kids that were dinged up. And so, you know, they took advantage of that. And, you know, when he touches the ball 30 times a game, he's going to have big yards.
Right, right. In this game, he goes for 228 yards off of 31 carries. On the flip side, it should be to no surprise that Colin Lewis once again is proving that he is a first-team All-Stater. Coach, he has 17 carries for 149 yards. He also finds the end zone three times. I mean, I know we talk about this every week. I don't want to beat a dead horse, but boy, this kid is something special. He's putting together one of the best seasons that we've seen in quite some time.
You know, he definitely is, and we're just going to continue to keep feeding him the football. He's kind of what our offense is designed around, where we're going to run that option with him. And you know, he's always the first option. If we have the opportunity to give it to him, we're going to give it. You know, if we pull it, you know, that's another thing. But, you know, for the most part, we're just going to try to get the football in his hands.
You know, I ask you this, Coach, I think pretty regularly. Does it change on the amount of touches? Do you monitor this during the game? Or is it just, you know, give him the football, let's play it in the game, let's make sure we stay, you know, in the flow of the game?
You know, and that's the thing is when you're running the triple option, you don't change a whole lot. You know, your first option is always going to be give it to the fullback. And a lot of the time, that's the decision that our quarterback has to make. He's either going to keep it or, you know, he's going to give it to him or he's going to pull it. And he hasn't really had a need to pull it this year. And so we're just going to let it continue to happen.
As far as the game itself goes, Coach, I know there were a couple of turnovers in this game that maybe changed the complexion. One, in fact, that I saw was Jalen Dennis fumbling on a kick return. I mean, if you go back over the course of this game and you look at turnovers, I know you almost have to play a perfect game to beat a team like Grantsville. You almost have to play a perfect game to beat a team like Morgan. You can't give them free possessions. If you go back and you rewrite a couple of these turnovers, is this a game that you guys have a chance to win late?
I think it is. You know, Jalen was trying to make something happen. He had the ball in the wrong arm as he was making that cut back across the field. I don't think he needed to make the cut. I think if he would have just lowered his head and run down the sideline, I think he'd probably gain 10 or 11 more yards. But, you know, he tried to cut back and make something happen, just had the ball on the wrong side, and a kid from the field came in and knocked the thing out. But, you know, those are things that you deal with. Those are things that happen in the course of a football game. And you know, is it a game changer? You know, I'm not quite sure that play right there would have changed the outcome of the ball game. But, you know, it definitely gives us another possession.
You and I have talked situational football all year long, and, you know, from your perspective as a coach, when you have a kid that's trying to make a play, it's probably hard to get down on a kid like that, right?
No, you know, they're already down on themselves because they felt like they've let the team down. And so as the coaching staff, we just got to build that player up and say, you know, forget about it. You know, it's something that happens in a football game. We move on, you know, win the next play. And so, you know, we got Jalen right back in there on defense and told him to go win the next play.
Coach, I know you're not a moral victory guy, but is it fair to say this team's playing the best football that they have played in your 4 years as head coach?
Oh, I definitely believe that they are playing their best football. You know, it's been fun to watch. It's like I told someone the other day, I said, you know, that was a good football team that we played. We put 23 points on a good football team. And you can't be ashamed of that. You can't be down on that. They just scored more points than we did in that one.
Again, we're being joined right now by Coach Josh Huntsman of the Carbon Dino football team. Coach, let's fast forward to Friday. We get the Morgan Trojans. It's a team that's complete opposite of what Grantsville wants to do. They do have a kid, a very talented kid at quarterback, and Carter Thackeray. He's going to spread the ball around, and he'll hit a number of different wide receivers. I believe he hit 9 or 10 in the contest Friday against Emory. So Grantsville wants to pound the football. Morgan, they're going to spread things out, and they're going to move through the air. It's a completely different look.
Well, let's just hope that it's still stormy on Friday,
right,
when we play,
right?
Because, you know, that will kind of hinder some of the things that they'd like to do. Kind of plays into our favor if we have bad weather, and so, you know, we can hope for that. But, you know, we're gonna go out there and we're gonna try to put our defense in the best possible situation. We've got some different wrinkles in our coverages that we're gonna show this week, just so, you know, we can keep him honest. We want to make him, you know, we want to make him stay in the pocket. We want to make him, you know, throw the ball short. We can't let the long passes happen. So, like I said, we've got a few things that we'll do in the back end to help that situation.
This is a completely different team, and I'm talking of Carbon now compared to where they were in week one, Coach. And I've seen vast improvement in the secondary from that first game against Manti. I'll even fast forward to the game against Ogden. I thought the secondary played well, made a couple of big plays in that game, and you guys were in position to get a victory there. How comfortable are you playing a team that wants to attack through the air? And nearly, I'm not going to say they're one-dimensional, but they would prefer to be one-dimensional. I mean, that's kind of the way they want to play.
Yeah, you know, they don't want to run the football. They like to throw it. They've got a lot of wide receivers that they like to get the ball to. And so, you know, if we can keep them to 1-2 yard catches, I think we're going to be in pretty good shape. They're a good football club. They do things well, and they're in state championship games for a reason. But, you know, I think that our kids are tough. I think our kids will go out and they'll play hard. I think that, you know, we're going to give them a run for their money this weekend.
Yeah, I got to watch Morgan on Friday, Coach. I know you've watched video. Am I crazy in thinking that you guys can be just as physical as this team? Because I think up front in the trenches, that's what I'm most interested to see on Friday night. I think it's going to be pretty compelling.
I think it will be. I think, you know, we're going to pound the football at them and see what they're made of. And, you know, they're going to try to throw it and finesse it a little bit. But, you know, I've always been the type of guy to run it first and see what happens. And so, you know, we're going to run the football at them and see what they're made of.
We have two games remaining in the season, Coach, in the regular season. Golden opportunity for you guys to clinch a home playoff spot if you can get a win on Friday. It's really going to make things very interesting moving down the stretch. I mean, you guys could throw a lot of uncertainty all the way from number 1 down to number 6 if you guys get a win on Friday. I know that the old saying, you know, the next game is only as important as the current game, but at the same time, I mean, over these final 2 weeks, you guys actually have a legitimate chance to cause some headaches and make this a very tight race 1-5. And that's entertaining. That's fun football. That's a fun position to be in.
You know, it definitely is. And everything looks good on paper. And, you know, until you go out there and actually play the football game, that's, you know, that's what makes it fun. Because, you know, on paper, Morgan should win outright. You know, they should be the number one in the region. And Grantsville should be number two. But if we go out and play the type of football that I know we're capable of, we can put a wrinkle on that. And I think you could see different number one, you could see different number two, you could see different number three, all the way down the line. And, you know, that's what makes it fun. I mean, you play all the games leading up to this point to get into a position to play spoiler.
I have to ask you about injuries every week, Coach. I know every team has injuries at this stage in the game. Nobody is 100%. No kid is 100%. But how do you guys look on that front now that we're nearing Friday's game?
We've got a few that will not be playing this weekend. And, you know, I'm not going to throw out names right now, but we do have a few that we know that won't dress for the game. And you know, we believe in that philosophy of next man up. So we've got guys that prepared, we've got guys ready to go and guys ready to play. But yeah, we have three or four of our starters who probably won't be playing in this football game.
I know in years past that would be absolutely devastating to this program, but numbers are up, right?
Yeah, they're definitely up, and we definitely have good players that can fill those spots, you know, where there's not a lot of drop off between our number ones and our number twos. You know, but it's you get towards the end of the season and you know, you might see a different football team, and that's just how it is.
Last week, Coach, I asked you, you know, what was the team's reaction to the victory over Emory? Have you noticed a different team since that victory? Do they have, I don't want to use the word arrogance, but I mean, do they play with a little chip on their shoulder now, knowing like, hey, we can go out and win football games?
Yeah, they're playing with a little bit more confidence, you know, a little bit of swagger, and we like that, you know. And We were upset by the loss to Grantsville, but I mean, we put 23 points up on a really good football team, and so we were pleased with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Lastly, Coach, before I let you go, now that we are into the final home stretch, I start looking at playoff matchups a little bit. I know you got two football games you got to prepare for before we get to the playoffs, but at the same time, I want your opinion on the 3A South. Have you paid attention to that region at all?
You know, I've looked at it a little bit, and you know, I kind of see it as you're going to have. You'll have it's kind of an interesting matchup there, but you're going to have Summit Academy will probably be number one. I firmly believe that North Stampede will be number two. You'll probably get number three with Juan Diego. Manti will be number four. I'm thinking GWAB will probably be at five, and Richfield will be at six. And so, you know, if we play our cards right and win a couple of football games, we could possibly be hosting GWAB on that in a playoff game.
To me, this is the most competitive and compelling the 3A classification has ever been.
I think so too, and Manti kind of played spoiler with that 28-point comeback in the fourth quarter against UAP, and it made it exciting for everyone across the state.
Coach, it's always fun to get you on and get your perspective. Thank you so much again for the time, and we will see you at the game on Friday night.
Yeah, I appreciate having you. Appreciate you letting me be on, and remember, go Dinos.
Go Dinos, definitely. Coach Josh Huntsman joining us here on Drive Time Sports. And we got a break for just a moment. When we return, we're going to be joined by a very special guest, Ian O'Connor. He is a New York Times best-selling author, also a senior writer for ESPN. His latest work is on bookstore shelves. It's called Belichick, The Making of the Greatest Football Coach of All Time. This is going to be a very interesting interview. Ian has joined multiple nationally syndicated shows, including Colin Cowherd and Scott Van Pelt over the last little while. And now he'll join us next when we return to talk about his latest work. Perfect timing, because tonight we get Thursday Night Football with the Colts and Patriots. Ian O'Connor is joining us next when we return on Drive Time Sports.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750, the play-by-play home of the USU Eastern Eagles.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Forum Studios, Thursday edition of the show. Don't forget, coming up tonight, the New England Patriots will take on the Indianapolis Colts, Thursday Night Football on KOAL. The return of Julian Edelman tonight. Hey, we're going to spend the next segment, maybe even two segments, talking about the New England Patriots. And I'm really excited for our next guest. He's an ESPN senior writer and also a New York Times best-selling author, Ian O'Connor. He has his latest work out already. It's called Belichick, The Making of the Greatest Football Coach of All Time. Ian is joining us right now over the phone. Ian, a pleasure. Thank you for the time today.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. I was very interested in getting you on the show, and I know that you've been making several national appearances of promoting this book. I haven't had a chance to read it all. I did get my copy in the mail yesterday. All in all, I tell you, there's not much more you can say about Bill Belichick than wow. I think he's one of the most fascinating individuals in professional sports history. I mean, we can talk coaches all day long. Bill Belichick is going to rank at the very top of that list. So I got to ask you, Ian, what was it about Bill Belichick that made you say, okay, I'm going to put together this extensive book?
Well, it was what you just said. I think he's the most fascinating figure in American sports. I don't think there's a close second. So the mystery and intrigue about him, I wanted to explore. I also wrote a column in 2000 when he got hired by New England saying it was a mistake. So I've always sort of been A, haunted by that column, and B, fascinated by how this person just defied everyone, because back in the day, around that time, 75% of the NFL had that opinion that Bill was never going to be a successful head coach. So it was more an examination of the hows and whys as far as Bill Belichick becoming the greatest NFL coach of all time, and also to humanize him. And I really wanted to do that because I figured that there was a different human being away from the facility that he never showed in the public arena. So I wanted to explore that aspect of his life. I assumed it existed. I have to say, I was surprised at how big the gap was between workplace Bill and human Bill away from the stadium. But in talking to many of his associates and friends, I think I was able to, in this book, through 350 interviews, paint a full human portrait of the man and not just the coach. And I guess I will let the reader ultimately be the judge of whether or not I pulled that off.
How much influence did Bill Belichick have in this project, if any at all?
He would not cooperate at all with this, which I sort of suspected when I signed on 3 years ago to do it. And certainly he owes me nothing, absolutely nothing. And I was a little disappointed that he reached out to some people and asked them not to cooperate as well. But in some ways, that's what Belichick does. He puts obstacles in front of his players and assistant coaches and challenges them to defeat those obstacles. And so I took it as a challenge. And I think in some ways it made me a better reporter. And I was digging deeper and doing everything I could to find people who would talk. And sometimes I felt like it was a race to get to certain people before Bill did. But there were people in the Patriot organization, players who were at the bottom of the roster. They were in the same meetings and heard the same instructions and stories from Belichick that Tom Brady and other very significant Patriots heard over the years. So I mined those sources and had to grant anonymity to many so they could speak freely about Belichick, who it's a lot easier to do these bios when the figure is retired or no longer with us on the planet. Belichick is very much the active head coach of the Patriots, so that presented the challenge, and I think I met it, and I think this is going to be the defining portrait of Belichick as the greatest coach ever.
We've had multiple players on the show that have played with Bill. I'll tell you, one of the more fascinating ones that we had is, as far as a conversation with Bill Belichick, was Benny Ricardo, who was a place kicker for the Lions back in 1976, 1977, and Bill obviously was the assistant special teams coach for the Lions at that particular time. If we go back over the course of time, when does this book start to mold the coach, Bill Belichick? Do you go all the way back into the 70s when he was a special assistant around the Colts and the Lions and even with the Broncos?
Oh, I go beyond that. It's really even before he was born. His father was such a significant force in his life as a person and as a coach. His dad, of course, was a longtime assistant at the Naval Academy. But during World War II, his father served in the U.S. Navy and was stationed on Okinawa. And he was in an officer's club, and one of the first black officers in the U.S. Navy walked in. His name was Samuel Barnes. He later became an executive with the NCAA. And every white officer in the club walked out except for Steve Belichick, who befriended him. And Barnes' daughter told me they became roommates and that the Belichick name really resonated in her family because of that act of kindness and common human decency. But Bill grows up in a household in Annapolis that was way ahead of its time in terms of race relations in this country. What Steve Belichick did during the war, that was before Jackie Robinson at Ebbets Field in Brooklyn. That was 9 or 10 years before Brown versus Board of Ed in the Supreme Court. So I think when people wonder how Bill connected with the modern athlete over time as an old school curmudgeon, and particularly the African-American athlete, he came out of a very progressive-minded household, and I think that had a profound impact on him as a person. And Steve, as a coach at the Naval Academy, was all about detail and execution and precision, because he was not just training football players. He was training students who were going to be combat officers in the Navy. So Steve Belichick had just a tremendous role in shaping Bill as a person and as a coach without imposing his profession on him. He did not in any way force or push Bill into coaching. It was something that Bill naturally gravitated toward because he saw how much his father loved it.
You know, you talk about Bill Belichick the person and then Bill Belichick the coach, and I have this conversation with people regularly, and this is at various levels, be it if we're talking professional or if we're talking college. I think the fan has it in their mind that these individuals are intellectually on just a different level. And Ian, tell me if my assessment is right or wrong here. In order to turn off Bill the coach and become Bill the family man and vice versa, it takes a special person to do that. What allows Bill Belichick to do that, at least in your research?
Well, I think when he's at work, he walls off that human part of himself, and that's not an easy thing to do. All he cares about when he's at the facility or at the stadium is, what can I do in this moment to help us win a football game? And that is it. He's like a machine. He is a football-winning machine. And so there are things like he'll walk by Robert Kraft in the hallway, and here's a man, the owner of the Patriots, who pays him millions upon millions of dollars every year to coach the team, and not say a word to him, not even say hello, ignore him, because he actually believes that there's no point in wasting 3 seconds for small talk when those 3 seconds can be devoted to thinking about a game plan or a scheme or about an upcoming opponent. So, but his friends insist that it's a Jekyll and Hyde act, and it's strategic in that at the podium in his news conferences, Bill is setting an organizational tone for his players, and that is built around the idea that we are in the business of collecting information and not sharing it. And that's why he gives those grim non-answers to questions, and he wants his players to do the same thing. I do know that Bill has competed against some coaches that he believes have been too candid in the news media during the week. He takes that information and he uses it against that coach on Sunday. So he runs his program the opposite way. Now, as a person, they say he's kind, he is engaging, charming even at times. He very generous and loyal. He's a very loyal friend. And I just that's a figure that some of his friends would like to see him show a glimpse of in the public arena. But at age 66, he hasn't done it yet, for the most part, and I don't think he's going to start now.
Again, our guest right now is Ian O'Connor. He is the author of the new book, Belichick. We're talking about Bill Belichick right now. Obviously, in this book, you are going to talk a little bit about the relationship with Tom Brady. And again, you just mentioned sometimes coaches are a little too candid, and Bill Belichick can take that, and he can use that against a coach on Sunday or Monday or even Thursday. But at the same time, I guess that goes within the organization as well, which is a finely tuned, you know, oiled machine. And I know you address this in the book as well, right, Ian, that it's kind of amazing that the rift between Belichick and Brady, it took 18 years for that to come out. It's kind of amazing.
Yeah, it is, because if you think about it, they're working in close quarters day after day, week after week, season after season. And I'm sure they had their issues that they walled off behind the facility walls and just didn't allow it to get out into the public arena. But last year was different, and it did spill out, and it got ugly, and it got to a point where Brady, in late March, was still considering walking away rather than playing for Belichick one more season. So it got to DEFCON 1. But the partnership has always been transactional, never transformational. When Brady has needed love and affection in that organization, he turns to Robert Kraft. That's where the bromance is. They live near each other. When they have issues with Bill, they talk to each other about those issues. And with Belichick, it's been the best transactional partnership in the history of the NFL. I think Bill had coached him in such an unrelenting way that it finally caught up to Tom last year. And that was part of the problem, but not the full extent of it. The way Bill cut team access to Alex Guerrero, Tom's trainer and business partner, was a part of it. And the benching of Malcolm Butler in the Super Bowl was part of it. That really angered Brady, as it did many of the Patriots. So you put all that together, and there was Tom sitting there in the offseason wondering, what am I going to do? And he wanted to continue playing, but not necessarily for his head coach. And the way he spoke, the way he exhibited how he felt, was he didn't show up for voluntary workouts. 32 starting quarterbacks in the NFL, 31 showed up for OTAs. The only one who didn't is Tom Brady. And I think that message was received loudly and clearly.
It's amazing. The old saying is winning cures everything, but I guess when you win on such a consistent basis, maybe that term goes out the window. I don't know.
Well, and they did so much winning that it superseded whatever issue. And who cares if they don't love each other? They did respect each other. And always, Belichick realized Brady's greatness, and Brady realized Belichick was the best coach in the league. There was no question about that. But I've covered the Steinbrenner Yankees when there was a lot of internal conflict and they were still winning. And the Michael Jordan Bulls, Phil Jackson and Michael Jordan weren't even speaking to Jerry Krause to put that team together. So you can do it with conflict. You can still win. And I just think after, you know, with Brady too, he had five tough years at Michigan under Lloyd Carr. So it was really 23 years of very rough coaching that finally broke him. And the confrontation was really inevitable since the night they drafted Jimmy Garoppolo in the spring of 2014. As soon as that happened, there was going to be a confrontation, and it was just a matter of when, and it happened last year.
Again, we're being joined right now by Ian O'Connor. Ian, I have to break for one quick moment. Do you have time for one more segment with us?
Yes, absolutely. Thanks.
Excellent. We have more coming up with Ian O'Connor on Drive Time Sports. When we return, we'll continue to talk about his book, Belichick, The Making of the Greatest Football Coach of All Time.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750 with Jordan Boscarini.
Life in the fast lane, moving at the speed of life, and I can't slow down. Only got a gallon in the gas tank, but I'm almost at the finish line, so I can't stop now.
We're back on Drive Time Sports. We're going to continue our conversation with Ian O'Connor here from the Auto Forum Studios. Ian talking about his latest work, Belichick, The Making of the Greatest Football Coach of All Time. Ian, you mentioned the drafting of Jimmy Garoppolo, and obviously there comes a point in time within the organization where you got to make a move. You got to make a decision. Are you going to roll with Garoppolo, or are you going to try to deal him off? Obviously, the Patriots dealt off Jimmy Garoppolo. Was that one of those, I guess, how was that handled internally? And was that something that maybe could help the relationship of Belichick and Brady moving forward for maybe another couple of seasons if Tom so chooses to play?
Well, it could, I guess, but certainly it caused a major problem at the time. And Robert Kraft made it clear to Belichick that Tom Brady will retire a Patriot, whether that's age 44, 45, 46, whatever it is, he's not getting traded. So Belichick took that to mean, okay, well, now I have to make a decision to move Garoppolo. And he did. Now the question is, why did he only get a second-round pick for him, and why did he hand him to San Francisco? Get him out of the AFC, that much is clear and understood, but why not hold an auction among the 16 teams in the NFC, and certainly you would have gotten a first-round pick, I would think, for Garoppolo, but that didn't happen. So I think now that threat to Brady has been removed, I think that's why their relationship is back to a functioning level again. And they should be fine from here on out as long as they play and coach together. But only time will tell. Something else could pop up and set things awry a little bit. I guess we will find out. I think Brady and Belichick do have a sixth championship ring in them at some point over the next 3 years. And the one alternate scenario to Belichick that's plausible anyway, to Belichick coaching into his 70s, because I think he's a young 66 with a lot of energy left and a lot of passion for his craft, would be, let's say they win number six in 2 years. I could see Belichick handing it off to McDaniels, Josh McDaniels, his offensive coordinator, after convincing him not to take the Colts job last offseason. McDaniels and Brady have a very good relationship. They're like brothers. So maybe Belichick becomes president of football operations and allows those two to finish it out together. Other than that, chances are he's going to coach another 5 or 6 years, and I think Brady will be there right with him. I know Bill was looking forward to the day, and I wrote this in the book, where he could win a championship with another quarterback, but I do not see that happening.
Ian, one of the most fascinating things to me in football, I love coaching trees. And you and I could have a conversation, I know, about the Belichick coaching tree for a couple of hours on this show. But I want to cut to, in my opinion, the second greatest football coach on this planet right now, and that's Nick Saban. And for those who are unaware, these guys have a relationship that goes back three, almost four decades. And, of course, Saban worked under Bill Belichick in Cleveland from 91 to 94. And I'm reminded, and I haven't gotten to this part of the book, and I can't wait to get to when you actually break this down, but I am reminded of an interview in which Nick Saban called it the worst 4 years of his coaching life working under Bill Belichick. Talk to me about the relationship between Saban and Belichick, because to me, they're number one and number two as far as football coaches on this planet right now.
Right, the greatest pro and college coach ever.
Right.
And they're longtime friends. They have tremendous respect for each other. That's without question. But Saban was frustrated with Belichick on two fronts. And they had that great year together, Saban's last year as defensive coordinator in 94. They go 11-5 in Cleveland. They make the playoffs. They beat Parcells and the Patriots and then lose to Pittsburgh. But Saban, over time, was frustrated that Belichick did not allow him to speak to the media more often, which is funny given the way Saban governs his Alabama program. I don't see too many assistants there holding press conferences. But he wanted to get his name out there for head coaching opportunities like the one he eventually took at Michigan State. And also, he was frustrated with how conservative Belichick was with the game plan defensively. Now, during the week, Rob Burnett, the Pro Bowl defensive end of the Browns in 94, told me he had many conversations with Saban about just how frustrated he was over Belichick's just being so conservative with the game plan. And Burnett would say, Nick, we did this on Wednesday. It worked. Why aren't we doing this on Sunday? And Saban would say, Bill won't let me. And so over time, that wore him down a little bit, and after the 94 season, which was their fourth season together in Cleveland, Saban wanted some space between himself and Belichick, and he took the job at Michigan State. Another scene in the book, Belichick, and it's just amazing, Belichick's work ethic that he could wear out Nick Saban of all people, but he did. There was a scene in the book, Phil Savage, the great scout, told me one night, late night, Saban walks into a room and he just collapses to the floor. He says, I cannot work one more minute. I have to go home. I promise I'll be back here at 5:30 in the morning, but I can't work anymore. Belichick had broken his spirit, at least temporarily, and if you can do that to Nick Saban, I think that's saying a lot.
When you talk about coaches that are maybe too candid, and again, this is another section that I'm really looking forward to getting to in your book, I'm sure you dissect Super Bowl 36, which happened to be Bill Belichick's first Super Bowl victory. They beat the St. Louis Rams, in my opinion, probably the greatest team to not win a Super Bowl. What was so interesting about that particular aspect of Belichick's career? And I point back to it because it was his first Super Bowl win as a head coach.
Well, he did admit before that game that he tried in Cleveland to be too much like Parcells and couldn't pull it off as far as not relating to play. Parcells had charisma, and he was a berater and a screamer, but he also knew when to push those human buttons and hug you and bring you back into the fold, and he was very good. He might have been the greatest pusher of buttons, at least of his generation. And Belichick really struggled with that. I know the Browns I talked to said they always got the sense Bill did not care about them as human beings, and that's why they didn't play for him, and that's why they didn't win for him. But I think he changed in New England, and even in that 2001 season, Anthony Pleasant, who played for him in Cleveland and also in Foxborough, said he just saw Belichick easing up on players in practice, not being so draconian, realizing the human body can only take so much of a pounding. And even behind closed doors, connecting with players better, acting like he did care about them as people and their issues back home. And so he looked Belichick in the eye at a certain point later in that season and said, I want to win a championship for you. And I can tell you that no Cleveland Browns ever said that. And so he did change. Maybe people don't see that publicly with his press conferences and wonder how in the world can a human being like this inspire anyone to do anything. But in his office, one-on-one, he's a lot better than you would think. And I think that's why he ended up winning championships in New England that he did not win in Cleveland.
I'm a little ashamed to ask you this question, Ian, but I'm going to do it anyway just because I get told this constantly, and typically it's from lighthearted casual football fans. What do you say to those, after doing this exhaustive research over the last 3 to 4 years, to those who say, well, Bill Belichick's a cheater?
Yeah, and by the way, I should have mentioned the obvious in the previous answer. Brady is such a big part of that, that he needed a special player as the centerpiece of his program to have this kind of coaching career, and without that, it never would have happened. I don't subtract that from his legacy, by the way, because I think every great coach in every sport needs that. But as far as being a cheater goes, I think there's a difference between cheating and being a cheater and telling a lie and being a liar. And I think Bill has lived his career on the edge, on the boundary between fair play and unfair play. And I don't think he's defined by Spygate or even Deflategate, although in that case he was not found to have done anything personally that was against the rules. With Spygate, to me, there was not a sizable advantage there after studying him and his program for 3 years. I am sort of surprised that he took the risks he did and kept filming opponents when the advantage was not that great. So it's part of his legacy, and if a fan out there wants to disqualify him among the all-time greats because of Spygate, I think that's a fair opinion to have. It's just not one that I share. He shouldn't have done it, particularly when Eric Mangini with the Jets warned him not to do it in his building, and that was the day in 2007 at the start of the season when the camera was confiscated. And in my book, I have almost a comical scene of three officers refereeing the dispute over that camera between the Jets and Patriots in a back office in Giant Stadium. An undercover cop who infiltrated the Genovese crime family, an FBI agent, and a New Jersey State trooper ended up really deciding Spygate. They had possession of the camera. The Patriots, their security chief, Mark Briggs, who was a British Army veteran, on one side arguing to saying, hey, you guys stole my camera, I want it back. And on the other side, two Jets officials saying, this is corporate espionage, we want this camera handed to the NFL. Those three men, who have never been reported on or written about before, and I have this in the book, after 25 minutes, they were the judge and jury, and they decided to give it to the NFL. Had they given that camera back to the Patriots, Spygate never happens. So an interesting twist there. But at the end of the day, I don't think Bill Belichick won 5 championships because he's a cheater. I think he won 5 championships because he worked harder, out-detailed, and outsmarted his opponent.
I agree with you 100%. Ian, lastly, before I let you go, you're a senior writer again at ESPN.com. You have a couple of critically acclaimed books, including Arnie and Jack, and then, of course, The Captain, The Journey of Derek Jeter. Among all your history and writing, where would you put this piece of work as far in terms of ranking? I mean, how dear is it to you, especially with as much time and as many people as you interviewed?
Well, it's certainly the most challenging and rewarding thing by far I've ever done. So to date, in doing this for more than 30 years, I really don't think anything compares to this. The amount of work, of the blood, sweat, and tears I put into it for 3 years, the hundreds of people I talked to, I reached out to more than 500, I believe, as an estimate, to get 350 people to talk. As you know, many would be concerned or afraid to talk about Belichick for the record. So, no, this is my defining work, and my intention was for it to be the defining portrait of Belichick, and I hope readers get a chance to see it that way.
Ian O'Connor, such a pleasure to get you on the show to talk about the book Belichick. Thank you so much for the time.
Oh, thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
That's great stuff from Ian O'Connor. Unfortunately, we are out of time here on Drive Time Sports. Do not forget, coming up, 6 o'clock, live pregame coverage of the Colts and the Patriots. Thursday Night Football returning to KOAL 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM. We will be back tomorrow to do it again. I'm Jordan Buscarini. Be safe. I am out.